Oh, we're back?
That's good.
To be quiet, right?
What?
Jane and Marcel wrote a history of the Methodist churches in Aberdeen.
Is that right?
And I'm getting ready. In fact, I got somewhat written on this farm in the family. I was writing it more for the younger generation than anything else.
Uh-huh.
I got a cold this morning. That's the reason I went to the doctor's.
Oh. Well, this weather has been changing. You know, we had such hot humidity, and now all of a sudden it's gotten cool, and it's hard on people.
I had to hear all that.
Oops.
What happened. I never gone. I had a telephone call.
Well, first of all, I might like to ask you both about, I believe you both are native Aberdonians, and would you like to?
I was born in Perryman, and I was raised at Questwell. My grandfather.
That's a suburb of Aberdeen,
yeah. Yeah, I guess it is. It's between Aberdeen and Bel Air. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit closer to Bel Air. To Bel Air than Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. But still, we went to Aberdeen to school.
Mm.
Drove horses. And I drove a carriage and took six other girls and went to Aberdeen High School, the little room school, when we finished one room school.
Mm.
And that right there at Questwell's store was Grandfather Hanway's big 150-acre farm. And my father farmed it until he died, because he got a farmer to farm it for him until he died. But across the way where the Smiths used to live was my great-grandfather's farm, the Hanways, there.
And what was it like growing up on that farm?
Well, it was hard work. But we kids didn't have what the kids have today by any means, because we worked with chickens and we worked with the garden and we worked. My daddy made ice cream and we sewed by the gown and half gown. And we all had all those milk things and things to clean up. And then we took rats with one half a gallon and gallons to 2 gallons of ice cream all the way around the country. And in a buggy and horse or a Dayton wagon, and sold it. And then go back and get the cans in the things. That's what we did as Packley. We had good times, so. Going to school, and that was, if you see that house, you see it has porch on two sides of it. We used to have dances on them and have good times too. So when every occasion came up, we went to Aberdeen Grove Church all my life, and there, and all the other things that came up and. To do and ram, that's what we did in those days. Mm-hmm. We didn't run around like we do now. Right. So that was it. I met him over here at school. He was going to Tolton though then, I think, when we met. But my girlfriends were over here. Was anything going on in Aberdeen? I had a second home in Aberdeen. I'd stay all night. And sometimes we came on the train instead of driving over. The last year, my daddy had a car, so then he brought us over every day. Yeah. Right. I had two other sisters. One lives in Bel Air and one lives in Happy Crest. One married and the other one didn't. So they're both, I call them old maids now, both of them. They don't have any family at all. Mm. I have all the family. That's it. But you tell yours.
Well, I'm just thinking of where to start. Well, I'm the third one of nine children, of which eight are still living. And the ages vary from 72 to 80, up in the 80s. We were all born here on this place, which is part of an old grant. Excuse me. I can give you a write-up better than I can talk it, maybe. But this is part of the original Rudd Exchange, which was patented in 1737 by Colonel White. And in about a little while before the Revolutionary War, either his son-in-law sold 450 acres to a family by the name of Everest. And my first grandfather in this country, by the name of Cronin, who came from Ireland about 1800, married a daughter of Ben Everest. And in about, my dates are, I'd have to look them up, sometimes I forget my exact dates, but about 1818, I think it was, 150 acres of this farm where we now live was deeded to Ben Everett's daughter and my first grandfather. And that started the Cronin family in here, and the farm has been in the family ever since. I'm the one that really has lived on the farm this long. Now, when having been born in the last century, things have changed considerable. When I was a youngster, farms were more or less self-sufficient. You raised wheat and corn and had dairy cows. The milk was shipped to Balmer by train at first in cans. And later on, my dad started the first milk route that was in Aberdeen. Of course, it wasn't a very extensive route because there weren't too many people there. I think maybe by that time the town census was probably around 400, something like that, plus or minus. And we used to, having a large family, wasn't very much, too much ready cash. We made our own play, let's call it. Of course, summertime, why, we thin corn, milk cows, things of that sort. And we used to take, in the fall or winter time, we used to go, and my dad with a two-horse wagon, to where we load on corn and wheat and go to the mill and come back with ground feed for the cattle and buckwheat and flour, cornmeal for the family. Of course, we raised a lot of things that we stored in the cellar. And I tell you, more or less sufficient, because we did have, just like many other farms, you had pigs, which are slaughtered and smoked and pickled and whatnot for winter time. But as time went along, the family started to scatter a little bit. In the First World War, one brother who just turned 18 joined the Air Corps and continued with the Air Corps, the First World War, the Second World War, and then became, or he was employed by the Air Corps as post engineer after became too old, came off flight status. He was in charge of a commanding officer of a flight field in North Ireland during the Second World War. Right now he's retired and lives in Virginia. And the oldest brother, he was the only one that really got into the war. I was subject to draft in the First World War, but the armistice came along, and when I was about ready to go to camp, and of course we were too old for the Second World War. And at that time, I was working for the government anyhow. But we started scattering and got married. See, I have three sisters, and there were six boys. One of my brothers worked a very good while in Saudi Arabia in laying pipeline. He's a construction engineer. Came home with excuse me for the cold. He came home with cancer and didn't live long after that. So of the nine, the oldest is a lawyer. The second,
he has his life history.
The second one is he's a geologist or a mining engineer. Me, my last rating was a research engineer. The next brother was a construction engineer. Then the three girls, two of them have, the oldest of the three has a degree from Goucher. The oldest has went to Western Maryland, and the next has a degree from Goucher, and the third one has a degree from Maryland. And then the next two were boys, and he didn't like much education, but he eventually ended up by owning where he dealt in coal and fuel oil. But he's since sold that, and he does a little work in, on furnaces and all that. And the youngest one, following in the footsteps, the oldest, is a lawyer. Hmm. That takes care of the family, my family.
Mm-hmm. You want me to show the book what you did?
Now, coming back to the farm, it has existed.
You want to talk about the milk business?
What?
You want to talk about the milk business?
Oh yeah, well, I'm coming back to that, retracing a little bit now. I told him my dad started the first milk route, and from that, right after the First World War, we built a small pasteurizing plant in Aberdeen. And then that involved, and then some few years later, I bought the ice plant from Bill Strasbaugh, and I built an addition to that, and we moved the dairy down there because we had all the ice making machinery and all of that, and it's much more profitable to run everything together. But eventually we sold all of that, and then I went to the proving ground. I worked there for 35 and a half years and retired in
1961.
Book that tells it. And they presented me with a medal, the second highest in the field. Out in the field. So I suppose I earned my money there anyhow. Irrespective of what some of them think these days. But now coming back to the farm, originally it started out as about 150 acres, and it lies between the north branch of Swan Creek and the west branch of Swan Creek. And I have an old map downstairs of which the house up here is dotted on there. And that house, portion of that house is, I would say, was built around the Revolutionary War time, because it's partially of log, partially a frame, and it's been revised two or three times. But so that it's really hard to tell what was the original part, but I think from the original part was the front of it, which was long and rather narrow with a shed addition in the back. But the front part has both floor and ceiling joints that are white oak logs that are just flattened. And I haven't been in the walls of that to see what's in the walls of the front. But then it was revised in about 1860, something along in there. Coming back to the town of Aberdeen, my first recollection of Aberdeen was there just weren't many houses there. Main Street or Bel Air Avenue was Not too many houses there. Hall's Crossroads, which was the original stagecoach station on old Route 7, was still in evidence. But Route 7 had been changed from crossing the railroad, or when the railroad crossed it there. After the railroad crossed it down below Aberdeen, while they came through Aberdeen, then they went across it and went all the way around to Swan Creek. But then, after we bought the ice plant, they came along and put Route 40 right straight through the town. Up Broadway, as they called it at that time. There weren't too many houses. I attended as some of us older youngsters attended the old schoolhouse there, which was built back in the 90s, little frame structure, and had it too by the time I got there. It was four rooms. I think earlier it was two, and then when I got there it was about four, and then later they built the old brick high school there. Of course, since then that's been added to and abandoned. But Aberdeen has grown in my memory from about 400 people and to, taking in the metropolitan area. Now if you take about a mile radius from the center of town, you'll find probably 30,000 people. So it really is the largest community in Hartford now. Of course, they have plenty of more high schools, more schools than they had at that time.
Have you seen this book?
Mm-hmm.
You have read?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. Then he also read the history of the church down here, too.
Oh. Well, now, let's see, of one of the most significant structures in Aberdeen, I would say, is the Methodist Church.
Yes, quite a church.
Now, has that been around for a long time?
No.
Used to be two Methodist churches in Aberdeen.
See, I'm from the Southern Methodist Church. See, we were divided. During the Civil War, they split. And you had where the present location of the Methodist Church is, that was the last of what they used to call the Northern Methodist, or the Baker Church, or whatever you want. Now, see, the Methodist Church started over here in Busch Forest. There were three churches there, an old log church, a stone church, and then a frame church. The frame church was finally torn down. Bud Wilson tore that down and built the insurance office in Aberdeen. The Southern Methodists built a little chapel at first, right along the B&O. And that church is there, which the, Church of God? I think it is, or Assembly of God. That was Southern Methodist Church. And then after some of us grew up, and we could see the uselessness of having a divided Methodist Church, we got together and we voted to join again.
He helped put them together. He was one of the men that helped to put them together.
They won, but some of my family, they never would. They just quit coming to that church. I couldn't convince them it was a good. But we went from two awfully weak churches struggling along to one strong church. Eventually, we got a church there, and now it would cost probably a couple $1 million to build. I guess it really cost us originally pretty close to $1 million. Yeah, Tavis Baker and I got together and worked things out.
What was the town like, as you remember? Were there many stores and places to go into? Did you go into town very much?
Yeah, I don't remember. In that book, you'll see a picture of the old railroad station. I don't remember that railroad station, because the station that's there now was built when I was a youngster. But we didn't, let's see, you could pretty nearly count on your hands the number of houses that were in Aberdeen from there on, from the Pennsylvania to the B&O. Incidentally, in winter time, that used to be a sleigh race course. They would come down in front, Laura's uncle's. The Henway store was there, and it had an oval in there. And that was the end of the race. The B&O was the starting point. And they used to start up there and come down there. Everybody cleared, and they cleared the way. Let them go. And it used to be nice to watch them race. But then you had, of course, the post office building was on the corner where they, which burnt down. That's on right on the corner there of Bel Air Avenue and Route 40. And then there was
Henry Terrence.
Adam's store. There were a meat shop and a grocery store and Bill Silver's brokerage office and Henry Terrence's store in there, and a couple of houses in there between there and what's now the apartment building on Park Street. And then on the other side was the bank. And well, over on Broadway on that corner, there was Berman's store. We used to come down. He had a little porch over that. And now we came down that street when we were kids.
And this is Bonnet's.
Well, that's up the other way. And he had a board floor, and he'd come in there and we'd stomp on that floor and make an awful racket for him. He had a little store in there. But anyhow, going and up Broadway, there were a good many houses, because that built up, because up that street was one, two, three, I think three houses. And then the old Northern Methodist Church, the first one that they built in Aberdeen. But it was, I just have a dim recollection of a real old building, because that was about the time they built that brick high school, and they tore it down and moved all the cemetery away. But on the other side, most of those houses on the other side, if you eliminate the garage and the office building there, most of those houses were there, all built back in the 1890s. of course, the filling station, and one or two things have disappeared. I mean, they replaced one house there, and Harry James' livery stable was in there.
That's where I used to take my horses.
That was quite a place. But
it was right
coming
back
up,
school.
There wasn't. They had coming up from the bank. You had a bonnet store, maybe a dry goods store, and bonnet store, bakery. And later on, well, I was grown then when John Smith put a garage in there. On the above there weren't any houses hardly, but on the other side of the street, of course, was the church, and Miss Annie Hopkins, she ran a boarding house. And then I think Liz Hanley, that's Laura's uncle.
It's where the bank is now.
Yeah, where the drive-in bank is. And let's see, coming up across the next street on the opposite corner, they're all, well, in fact, it was woodland on the north side of the street.
Doc Crone, who was the dentist.
Yeah, but that house was built, I remember when that house was built. And of course you had, well, there were three or four houses in that bank, that next block before you got to the that was on Rogers Street. Dick New lived in one of them. And who was it, Aubrey Mitchell?
George Mitchell
and Mrs. Silver, or rather
William Silver.
He ran the brokerage business. And then of course across the other street there was the Southern Methodist Church, and next to that was George Slee's store. He was quite an old boy. He ran the store and built boats too, and used to gun.
Get everything.
Duck hunter.
It was to get. He was superintendent of the Sunday school for 50 years and only missed one Sunday,
yeah.
Something like that.
Well, now, how important was corn to Aberdeen?
Well, in around the 1890s. Them along in there, maybe a little before that, a little after. But around, it started, the bakers started, met Frank and Tevis and their grandfathers and uncles and all that. They really started above Aberdeen, then moved into Aberdeen. The first, when I was a youngster, that apartment house on Bel Air Avenue and Paradise Road on this side, that was there was a canning house there. Later on, when I think Frank Baker converted that into a stable, and then it went into apartments. The bakers had a canning house, well, just this side of the B&O. There's a building that's partly, well, practically all the buildings are still there, but it used to be that the plumbing establishment took that. They were the latest ones, and Clyde Carroll, for a long while, sold second-hand machinery in there. But the canning business was quite a business around here. More canning around here than any place, anywhere, and I imagine in the States, in that 90 to maybe 1910, something along in there. But there were bakers, husbands, two or three Mitchells down towards, on that old Route 7, Parker Mitchell and Pearman, Neil and Parker Mitchell.
They still.
And any number of tomato canning houses. Used to be one down the woods here. Let's see now. It would be right in the woods about where Paul Betty lives. And there was one here on the farm for a little while. But as the guy once said that the corn wagons, corn and tomato wagons, see, they hauled them down to the old Pennsylvania, and they loaded them on the train there. That was the main shipping point. They said they were lined up there for a mile or more, waiting to get loaded into cars. But they've canned a lot of things, but all gone now except Parker Mitchell runs the one down Pearman. And that I don't think is going to last too long. It's all going south and west. I mean, not south and west, but west and northwest. At one time they had
enough land around here for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the proving ground came in 1918, and it took in all of that ground which they grew corn. It was it light soil, and it lent itself to, if they took care of it, to growing corn year after year. And they grew yada corn.
It was three canning houses on the proving ground.
Yeah. There were canning houses all around. There were corn canning houses. A lot of little tomato canning houses around. Yeah, we used to boost them where they ever went, up in the attic, up the home place up here where the old soldering iron and cans, the big cans, so with a little hole for the where the lids went on. But I don't know where all that stuff went.
Mr. Fred Smith, which was all my great grandfather's, had a canning house, and we were able to go over there and get everything canned. The corn and tomatoes. Just let him know what day we wanted it done. He would have it all. So, made it so nice, we could put it right up and take it over there and seal it, didn't have to carry it.
No, I've seen the town grow from 350 or more people up to what it is now, or as I say, a radius of a mile or something in the town. Within the town, why, you get that 30,000 people. Of course, that takes in the living quarters, apartment houses on proving ground, too. But I've seen a lot of changes from the horse and buggy days clear up to landing on the moon.
The airplane
horse
days.
Horse and buggy to the rockets.
What was it like when Aberdeen Proving Ground moved in? How did it change Aberdeen?
Oh, it changed from a sleepy little country town to quite a busy place.
We built the ARC, and that's where I worked a lot over there. I was really bossing it around for a while, finding people, rooms,
mm-hmm.
And giving directions where they could find this and find that and so forth.
I guess, was the area prepared when all these people started coming in?
Yeah. I think they did to a certain extent, although My daughter was out on the street, and she came in saying, "Mother, nobody has any place to sleep at out there that's walking the streets. Can't we take her in for tonight?" And so finally, we fixed the room up in the attic. She was glad to get it.
She
kept on boarding. I boarded teachers and boarded people from the Proving Ground and came up here and still boarded teachers.
I
went back to what I did after I got married. I taught school in the one-room schoolhouse, one in Harford Furnace down there near Bell Camp, and the other one over in Lapida, which isn't anymore a school. I taught 2 years down there and 1 year in Lapida. And then I was head of the Girl Scouts for a year back in the 40s and ran that camp and helped the Girl Scouts out. So I've been kind of active. Now I'm running the family, which, as I told you, I had 3 daughters and 10 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren, so it keeps me going, especially when I have 2 sisters that don't have any family at all.
If housing wasn't so bad, the First World War, it was getting ready for the Second World War. That's when they were building up the Proving Ground. You see, we had the Depression in 30s. Well, really, it started in the latter part of the 20s, but in 30, 31, 32, 33 was the worst. And they started electrifying the Pennsylvania Railroad in there on that, what do they call it, WPA funds. And they were building up the Proving Grounds, and more people coming in, more soldiers and all that. And we formed, well, the Lions Club here in Aberdeen was formed in 1932. I didn't join until 33.
But he's had 41 years of perfect attendance.
Is that right?
We, shortly after that, we met with a Proving Ground in a town, and we started talking about the ARC. And we had gotten everything pretty well ready when the funds were available, that they built the ARC building. And that was the second one built. They built one at Edgewood first. But they had, of course, they had used other buildings for the program.
What does ARC stand for?
Aberdeen Recreation Center. They gave it that name and
it stuck. And they still have soldiers there. Have a room for soldiers now to come from the Proving Ground up there every night if they want to.
Yes.
And then they also plan programs on the weekend for them. And have buses and things there to take them places where they want to go. So they,
and was that pretty much how it was when you were working there too?
What happened during the war too. As much as they could, you know, allowed to go. They have more freedom there now than they did during the war, you might say. But they had the other towns to bring girls in for dances and things like that, weekends during the war. And sometimes it happens now. They have a special night. They don't do it regularly like they did it then.
Now they use the back end of it for the Maryland Transportation, or the Highway State Police and all that. They run that license.
Get license and things.
Driver's permits. Some of these days, I guess they'll build a new building.
Well, it's had to have a new roof on it and several things. It's been changed down there. Yeah. Different. They had the library there, even one little room, before we built our library. They have lots of different things there. And then took them other places. But we finally got a nice library. We just had a small one at first in Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. And they've taken that for,
ma'am?
They've taken the little library for what? The
district court.
Charles Kelly.
Oh, it's a court building.
Yeah, court. That's what I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
Have the trials there for the town in that building. Yeah. We have a Rice Library across the way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd like to see this medal.
That
surprised me.
I
didn't know I was in line for anything like that. But so my education, I got the hard way. You can open it up and read the inscription on the back if you want.
That's it.
For Department of the Army Meritorious Civilian Service to Richard F. Cronin. Huh. Now what was this called?
At the Meritorious Service Medal.
Uh-huh. Well, it's very...
That's the second highest that they give in the out and field service.
Is that right? Isn't that something? And you were real surprised that you had gotten it?
Yeah,
you didn't expect it?
I was. They presented me when I retired.
Oh. Yeah.
This is the pictures and what can write up in the paper. And this is the paper that they gave me.
Uh-huh. Well, now, were you originally in the ballistic research lab when you first went there?
When I first went, we called it a ballistic section. You see how I saw that grow from a section into the lab. We were in one wing of the administration building. And now it takes in practically all of Pasuti Island.
That's in 61, but this is, here he is here with somebody else. So it tells on the back of that. But
you have to give him that picture hanging on the wall in there.
Huh?
You have to give him that picture hanging on the wall. You know, when the boys took it. It's back of the door, I think, on that wall.
Oh, in the,
at
this one.
Now, the ballistics research, what did that have to do with? Was that the...
Well, first it started out, when I first joined that group, as a machine operator.
Now you have to explain that, because I don't know.
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's only 9, I said a 10 round burst.
10 round burst.
What's that?
We were they were having trouble with the ejection of a 20 millimeter cartridge from the gun. So we set up, now this line here is a chalk line really hanging down from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
That's a single cartridge. Each one of those is a flash picture of a single cartridge. We did all sorts of things. You see, I worked mostly with machine guns. Of course, I did quite a bit on ammunition, that is small arms, and I did small arms, or rather machine guns mounted in helicopters and stuff like that, a little bit of everything as far as small arms. Whenever they were in trouble, then they sent that particular gun or guns into us and see what we can make at them.
Hmm.
We take some of those guns and really change them from what they were. Yeah, they tell me that I knew more about machine guns than anybody in the country, and that isn't so. Who was it? I always forget his name. He had the lab, a little guy when we went down at memorial service. We walked out to the car and we met them and they were on. We stopped and talked for a minute. Yeah, he said, you know, when he said, I wished I had one of my machine guns in at some of his sessions. And then he said something back.
I can't say his name.
This guy knowing more about machine guns. But I traveled a lot for the government. I used to go up to Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Then Texas?
Fort Worth. They had a big airplane thing. They had that particular gun there. They had the B-26s.
Grubb was his name.
Grubbs.
Grubb.
Yeah. And go down there. That came more out of electric primers than anything else. I did a lot on electric primers.
Hmm. You don't want to hold on to that.
Okay. No, we not very much instrumentation that we bought. We made up a lot of instrumentation that we used in. But I still don't have an engineering degree. I was only about 3-4 subjects, but I took most of it in night school. After I was married, the kids were born. That was a tough way.
Then you were going to do that or build a house, and you built the house. So
yeah, 1949, I went up and talked to the head of the
current. 49? Yes, because that's when we moved in here.
Well, and
he went up and talked.
Built it in 49. But I had planned it out. I designed this house.
Is that right?
And helped build it. I had, I came out of the war. Came out of the war when I don't know, over 100 days leave. And they're getting ready to cut it back, and I thought, I had enough leave to take 6 months at Hopkins and take what courses I need for a degree. And we lived in Aberdeen then, and somehow or other, I went up and talked to the lab chief, old Colonel Simon. He then became a general, and he says, you really don't need a degree, although he says they put a lot of stress on degrees in this place. But he says that you get more knowledge at this place than you'll ever get from any university. So I took time off. When we started? We started on this house in June or July. I had it all sketched up. We finished, moved in November, was it?
No, 6th of December. I remember. Cold day it was, but it didn't snow that day.
I liked to design houses. I designed another one, built it up on the lot up on the hill there for my brother. But I like the design as this.
One thing I think we forgot was how the pipeline came and divided the farm. Built the pipeline right straight through the farm. Oh. That water pipe.
Yeah, we, 95, I didn't finish the farm. We At one time, this farm had 170 acres. It increased it from that 150 by a little farm which was originally part of Royal Exchange up above here, and a little lot over here, and a lot next to us down here. And then 95 came along, practically cut us in half. Then I had retired by that time, and I went to farming. I had all my own farming. I raised cattle and raised all the feed for them. Took the corn to the mill and got it ground, filled the silo, and fed them. Although there used to be a guy that lived in a house that no longer there at the end of the lane, used to come up. I was there for 10 years after I resigned. I went back as a consultant. And I'm not much in that time. I take out Social Security and all of that. It wasn't worth going down hardly.
You're trying to sell that lot down the end of the lane, but they can't make a go of it. Been there twice.
That belongs to the state. So I could get after the state and tell them I better come down and mow it off before it grows up in locust trees. Mm-hmm. It used to be low. Every time the branch would get high, the guy lived in that high. The house was on stilts about so high, and the water would come up to the first floor. Whew. It's out of this flood area now, but well.
How did you get interested in history and things when you began writing, say, your history at Aberdeen and history of the church?
I don't know. I just, somehow or other, it was during the centennial, and I had written a very sketchy short history for a course at Hopkins, and they hung it on me, said, "Yeah, you lived here a long while, you can do it." So. Tell up. Some of my ducks I made. Mm-hmm. I used to do a lot of duck hunting. Two kinds of hunting I like, squirrels and duck hunting. Ducks, you put the decoys out and sit down and wait for them to come to you. Squirrels, you find yourself a hickory tree and sit down and wait for them to come around. Lazy hunter.
Right.
Huh. Well, some of the boys at Proving Ground used to say that I was the worst old poacher that was on the post. But I don't think so. There's two or three others that are worse than I was.
No.
But in my I never really asked for anything, but I've been president of the Lions Club, and I was secretary to the place for 17 years, and finally told them that was enough. And I was president for 2 years of the 25-year club, Proving Ground, and I was president of this duck club that we formed down there for, I don't know whether it was 1 or 2 years. And I thought that was time to quit from getting into all these things. So when I retired, I really retired.
Hmm.
But now I'm not retired. This farm is in a small business corporation I take care of the farm. I'm the first vice president executive. If that's any honor.
Well, I think you're treasurer too.
Well, I'm treasurer. I'm not treasurer, but I got the checkbook.
I like the what? That is treasurer.
No, Elizabeth's supposed to be treasurer. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make any difference. We had to have officers and all that. So.
Well, I belong to Lioness Club. We do quite a lot without them.
And I've been church school superintendent, chairman of the.
And they built that.
Chairman of the, what do you call it? The trustees.
Trustees. Then you helped to build the.
Was on the building committee.
Yes.
So when I could get out of things, I just got out of things. Let the youngsters do the work. Yeah, I can't. I'm having too much trouble with my legs. I can't do much walking anymore. I've had a bypass in this one. Doc says I ought to have one in this one, but he says you're too old now for that.
It's practically in all winter.